Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Kathy Ferguson in Morris at 815-941-3751. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's July 25th, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Kay Whitlock. She's of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. Dave Dickey, of course, will be along with all the agricultural news in a few moments. And just after the bottom of the hour, we'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. He'll update the latest weather conditions for the Midwest and the globe. It all happens on this Wednesday edition of WILL AM 580's Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialist. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for a representative nearest you.
Here are the weekly numbers from the Illinois Ethanol Plant Report, as released by the Illinois Department of Agriculture Market News Service. This week, the spot bids on Tuesday range from $2.79 to $3 for the ethanol for the number 2 yellow corn. That was down 28 and 3 quarters from last week. Basis at the ethanol plants in Illinois improved by 4 cents and ranged from 31 under to 10 under. From the Chicago Board of Trade on this Wednesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. In the nearby wheat futures, September contract at 6.34 was down 8 cents for the afternoon. December futures at 6.42 were down 3.5, The December wheat at 652.5 were down 6.5. From the corn pit now, September futures $3.11.5 were unchanged. December at 327.25 up a half. And the March futures at 342.5 up a half for the afternoon. December next year for the corn at $3.80.25 a bushel, down 1.25. August soybean futures 8.15 in Chicago, down 5.25. September's were down 6 at 8.22.75. November's at 8.39.25 were down 6.25. And next year's November's at 8.85 for the 2008 crop, down 4.5. Bean meal futures August contract at 2.15, down 40 cents. August bean oil at 36.62. That's off 17 for the afternoon. Over at the Mercantile Exchange, August live cattle 92.07.5, down 55 cents. October futures there 62.5 lower at 96.85. August feeder cattle at 115.85 were down 65 cents. September futures at 116.85. We're down 72.5, and the August lean hogs at $74.10 were a nickel lower on the afternoon. Taking a look now at the Chicago Board of Trade numbers with us this afternoon is Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Paul. Thanks for
being here. Good afternoon, along. Todd.
I appreciate you being with us today. Tell me a little bit more about what you saw in the trade for the day.
Well, as we look in the latest radar, we do see some pretty good rains over Ohio and parts of Indiana, and the noon weather forecast basically was pretty generous for east of the Mississippi. I did notice that Drew Lerner is pretty actively optimistic about good rains and the Minnesota, Iowa area, those dry areas. One weather forecaster that I was in contact with actually downplayed that a little bit. I think the rain's coming in probably Thursday night instead of Friday like we had this morning. So the marketplace was extremely quiet last night and today, and we did see some price erosion in the soybean market. And I'm not too sure that, the general concept here is just a lack of new news in the soybean complex, maybe some old longs in there that decided to lighten up with this forecast of rain, and the market, just played lower in the soybean complex. really, there is just a tremendous amount of news, a lack of news, and I think that's being talked about in the commodity market as well.
Are we expecting just a seasonal move lower at this point then, or have we gone far enough down that we need to consolidate before we head into harvest?
I did talk to an elevator today, and they're a fairly large operation, and he said that the whisper is that the elevators are holding a pretty good inventory of old crop beans that farmers have moved. I said, are they going to hold on to it till the Chinese buy it in the early fall time frame? And he said that was the million-dollar question, but the feeling is on any basis improvement, we'd see some movement. My general impression is that the soybean market really needs a good shot of adrenaline, either from weather or demand, and we're going to have to wait a while. Of course, August weather is extremely important. Export demand is also very important. We have played the smaller acreage card pretty hard, and also the potential demand. So the bean market is waiting for more news, and I think it will come about at some point in time. But right now, it's a dull, fairly mature market.
Have you been following, speaking of news in the bean market, have you been following the disease scare in China with their pig or hog herd?
Yeah.
And what do you make of all of what we're seeing from them?
Well, number one, we continue to hear rumors daily of a large import of U.S. pork. And, of course, that would be a tremendous shot in the arm. And we all talk about how are they going to get 100,000 tons of pork from the U.S. Over to China. Number two, in this next breath, we know that with the Olympics and also their standard of living improving, the pork is pretty darn high on the menu for wealthy Chinese. Our general impression here is, in the next breath, the Chinese want to increase pork production. Their herds are very large. I'm not too alarmed about any type of reduced demand on that sector. You know, their hog operations are fairly large as well as ours, and I'm sure that they're watching that closely. But I'm not too sure. I'm not too worried about demand, because obviously their income is so large that they'll buy pork somewhere to meet their diet needs, and I think that's the key to the bottom line.
Speaking of bottom line, what's Paul Cooley's bottom line for farmers at the moment? Are they just to stand aside and watch the market, or are there things that they should and could be doing?
The million-dollar question is, and of course I find this very intriguing, when Sparks talks about, or Informa talks about, the 75-cent corn cash advantage over previous years because of the ethanol and energy deal.
Mm-hmm.
And they go on and equate this 156 or 7 bushel corn crop to equal about $3 futures price. Of course, we have this tug of war on just how wide the basis is going to be on cash corn. So, you know, for modern reasons, if we do have this good corn crop, you know, probably figure somewhere in a 75-cent basis under that will probably be season's lows if we do have a good crop, and in particularly like central Illinois. Our general impression is we could be very close to some sort of a major bottom. Not only my commodity traders talking about it, but also some very well-respected commodity firms are also talking about it. Historically, the market can bottom in this time frame, and it's the basis unknown and some other things that can happen to make a big difference. One big difference is just how much rain is Western Corn Belt going to get in the next 48 hours. If they do get an inch of rain, well, you know, that's a big bingo for, a larger 152 or 3 bushel corn crop or higher. If it's a non-rain event, then we can go on and flirt with the conversation of that low 150 to below corn yields. And that's the big equation here. And don't forget, with high wheat prices and the concept of high costs of inputs, you know, we might be able to reduce that corn acreage next year. And, of course, we have to bid up for prices. World demand and ethanol usage is still fairly positive.
Are there things in the outside market that you're wary of or watching?
Well, every minute of the day, of course, we watch the Dow Jones very carefully and also the oil complex, because energy is the new commodity, past, present, and future, because it just makes everything happen. And, you know, we had energy lower, now it's higher, and, of course, the stock market's up, getting back up in this, I think, 1400 level. So that's good news. It means a lot of prosperity for the Midwest. It's 13.8 right now, but it's up 86 points, and that makes any investor in the stock smile.
We appreciate you being with us for
profitable
today.
Profitable day, Todd.
You too. That's Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. Happens each and every Wednesday afternoon at the bottom of the hour. We'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated about what the weather forecast for the Midwest looks like. Our own Mike Sola says the forecast for the two-state region tonight is like this. In Indiana, mostly cloudy. Some scattered showers. Those will be most numerous in the north. In the northeastern part of Illinois, mostly cloudy. A few chances of a few light showers. In the remainder of Illinois, partly to mostly cloudy. Lows between 61 and 66. Thursday in western and southern Illinois, partly to mostly sunny. Elsewhere, partly to mostly cloudy. Scattered showers and thunderstorms. Those will be most numerous in northern Indiana. Highs will range from 78 in northeastern Indiana to 90 in the southern part of Illinois. The extended forecast calling for quiet weather, which should return to the area late this weekend and into early next week. A weak high pressure will build into the Midwest from the Pacific Northwest, and that'll bring some warmer temperatures for much of next week. Dave Dickey's here now. He'll take a complete look at today's agricultural news. This is the Closing Market Report.
Senate Agriculture Committee Chairman Tom Harkin says expect a different farm bill in the Senate than the one passed last week out of House committee. Harkin is especially angry that the House version strips funding and enrollment for the Conservation Security Program. Earlier this week, Harkin said he wants to see the CSP expand to as many as 80 million acres by the end of the next farm bill. Harkin also expressed frustration in trying to find budget offsets for some of his proposals. Harkin says he's still looking for money from the Senate Finance Committee, but has, in his words, no hard and fast assurances. The House version of the Farm Bill has about $12.1 billion in offsets. Harkin says Farm Bill markup in the Senate has been pushed back until September.
Hopefully we'll markup in committee maybe the second week in September, and hopefully get on the floor before the end of September. Despite this delay, my committee staff and I are keeping a steady focus on two things: securing appropriate funding and crafting a forward-looking farm bill that makes investments for the future.
Meanwhile, rank-and-file House Republicans have reportedly been told to expect a veto threat. House Agriculture Committee Chairman Colin Peterson fired back yesterday.
The president, I think he does that at his peril. I mean, I think we have a bill here that, you know, the longer people look at it, the more they're going to realize that this is a good piece of work that's gets us set off in a kind of a different direction and makes some changes that we need to make.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has voiced support for the proposed farm bill passed last week, and that's not being well accepted by activist groups in her home district, entirely in the San Francisco city limits. However, Washington insider sources say Pelosi likely will not pay a price for supporting the omnibus farm bill. Floor debate on the farm bill in the House is set for tomorrow. Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley is calling USDA officials on the carpet. Grassley wants a Finance Committee hearing to address a government report that USDA paid $1.1 billion to dead farmers over a seven-year period. Grassley is demanding that USDA verify that all producers set to receive payments on October 1st are alive. Grassley also wants USDA to come up with new ways to verify producers are actually eligible to receive payments. The U.S. Patent and Trademark Office has ruled that Monsanto is not entitled to four patents which relate to its popular Roundup Ready crop technology. The decision, if allowed to stand, may prevent Monsanto from bringing lawsuit against producers who saved seed from the biotech crops. Monsanto has filed dozens of lawsuits against producers and negotiated settlements with hundreds more related to patent infringement claims. The decision stopped short of revoking the patents outright, allowing Monsanto time to respond. China has temporarily blocked a WTO investigation. The U.S. and Mexico are calling for the WTO to examine illegal tax breaks to encourage Chinese companies to export more to the U.S. while imposing tax and tariff penalties to limit purchase of U.S. products into China. The U.S. and Mexico will almost certainly renew call for an investigation in September. Under WTO rules, a second request for a formal investigation is automatically granted. At least two Indiana people are seriously ill with botulism poisoning after eating Castleberry's hot dog chili sauce. The FDA has issued a recall for millions of cans of food, as well as pet food produced in Georgia. A full rundown of products is at www.castleberries.com/news. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report, reminding you to visit our website. The address, of course, WILLAG.org.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible in part by a grant from Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities provides commodities analysis and recommendations for business and agriculture throughout East Central Illinois and Western Indiana. For information, call 866-837-9027.
This afternoon, Illinois U.S. Senator Dick Durbin introduced Farm Bill 2007 legislation that would replace current subsidy programs with a comprehensive revenue protection program that could ultimately pay producers when yields are low but prices are high. Durbin says the legislation, in his words, is an interesting brew and stew that evolved over the years. But the bottom line is keeping producers in business.
I think our job is to make sure that farmers can survive a bad year. And if that's the case, revenue is really the bottom line. It's not just the price of the crop, it's the yield of the crop. It's whether or not the farmers faced a flood or a drought or some other unfortunate experience. And so what we try to do, I think responsibly, is to combine the new farm program, the new approach, with a new approach to crop insurance so that there's more protection coming from the private sector, more protection coming from the farmer's own initiative.
Durbin's bill would integrate private insurance with a county-based revenue counter-cyclical program. Government payments would be triggered when a producer's actual revenue falls below 90% of the forecasted state target revenue for a specific crop. Ralph Grassi is with the American Farmland Trust. Grassi says the measure, co-sponsored by Durbin and Ohio Democrat Sherrod Brown, would build upon the bill that passed last week out of the House Agriculture Committee.
It's important to note that there are some very important improvements that this brings to the safety net. We heard from farmers in 2005 and 2006 when we went around the country and held workshops that the most important thing we could deliver in the next farm bill was a better safety net, one that really did provide protection against both price and yield fluctuations. And the revenue countercyclical program does that. By doing so, it also reduces the need for ad hoc disaster assistance. And we're all keenly familiar with how difficult it is these days to move a disaster assistance program through Congress. This would cover much of the need that disaster assistance has been focused on in the past, and it would deliver payments on a more timely basis than ad hoc disaster assistance. The countercyclical program reduces distortions in the current system. It allows revenue targets to be adjusted according to market signals rather than once every 5 year politically set target prices. Farmers would be making decisions about which crop to plant based on the market, not on some negotiated prices set in conference committee once every 5 years. It makes private crop insurance work better, and it appropriately divides up the risk between the private sector, that is the farmer and the private insurance company on their individual risk, and the public sector, the federal government, taking on the systemic risk that is very difficult for insurance companies to insure for. And finally, it is revenue neutral. And with all those things in mind, we hope the Senate Agriculture Committee will take this bill very seriously as it marks up its version of the Farm Bill.
It was American Farmland Trust Ralph Grassi. Senators Durbin and Brown stress that their new bill for the Farm Bill is a revenue neutral. Brown says it would be paid for through the elimination of current farm subsidies and a better constructed crop insurance program. Durbin says it's most likely the proposal will be an amendment to the Farm Bill legislation that comes out of the Senate Agriculture Committee, which is currently scheduled to be debated as a measure in mid-September.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson's team of experts and strategic consulting approach utilize the latest technology. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
It's a Wednesday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is WILL Urbana, AM 580. We're joined now by Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain out of Terre Haute, Indiana, to take a look at the basis levels and what's been happening in the cash grain market. Hi, Kay.
Good afternoon to you, Todd.
Let's start with basis. How are we holding up?
Well, the cash basis in corn has deteriorated in as far as grain values are concerned the last week, probably 5 to 6 cents. New crop values, believe it or not, have stabilized, and in some cases maybe just a tad bit better, but at least we've stopped that drastic slide. But the nearby basis levels are suffering a little bit more, I think. Elevators are trying to clean out before harvest, and so are farmers, so stuff is moving. And other than that, they sure haven't improved much, Todd.
We've had a habit over the last several years of bottoming early and then trending a bit higher as we go through harvest. Might that be the case this year for corn, and is there a difference for the beans where we've got just a mountain of beans hanging around still, I think?
Well, you know, of course, I think the basis levels are going to have a lot to do with flat price values, but I'm reading the same thing you're reading. I read a couple analysts yesterday who are saying that they think maybe we're going to hit seasonal lows here, maybe not till after the August crop report, but I really would be cautious to subscribe to that theory because I think these basis levels are going to plunge even further than where we are right now. Who knows where they're going to bottom out? We're just kind of treading new water here as far as this is concerned. But, you know, some are saying the board could get down to 281. Some are saying $3 on December corn, you know, could hold it. I don't think we've seen the bottom, but here again, this has been a different kind of year and anything can happen.
And then what are your expectations for the ability of farmers to pull yield in your area at this point?
We've got a heck of a corn crop here. There's no doubt about it, Todd. Anybody that's been very far away from here just says that this is the garden spot here in the Midwest. Excellent corn crop here. There are some areas that have been hurt north of here in the sand ground, but beans, jury's still out on beans. We've got some good beans and some bad. We've got some infestation here, I guess, in a lot of dry areas. We've got spider mite. But other than that, we've got a good corn crop, a lot of bins going up, and, boy, bins are going to be at a premium this year.
You betcha. What are your bids for the day?
Cash corn 309, cash beans 755, wheat 549.
Thanks much. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Kay Whitlock is with Terre Haute Grain out of Terre Haute, Indiana, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on Wednesday afternoons. In 2 minutes, we'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City about the agricultural weather forecast. Your regional newscast comes up next.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Governor Rob Blagojevich introduced his proposal for Illinois' budget back in March, and the legislature's spring session was supposed to end at the end of May. Instead, lawmakers today are setting a new record for longest legislative overtime session. When they met, the overtime session went to 55 days and still counting. Congress is applying more pressure on oil company BP to drop a refinery expansion plan that would add more pollution to Lake Michigan. Today, the House approved a resolution sponsored by Chicago Democrat Rahm Emanuel and Michigan Republican Vernon Ehlers that expresses disapproval of the plan. The vote was 387 to 26 in favor. The Indiana Department of Environmental Management issued a permit allowing BP to increase its daily dumping of ammonia and sludge into the lake. It's part of BP's plan to expand its Whiting, Indiana refinery. Members of Illinois' congressional delegation met yesterday with BP officials who agreed to look at alternatives to the increased dumping. Douglas County State's Attorney Kevin Nolan says he'll seek the death penalty against the two Chicago men charged in the crime spree that included the shooting death of a sheriff's deputy. First-degree murder charges were added to the list of counts against William Thompson and Yusef Kareem Brown last week after Chief Deputy Tommy Martin died. Democratic presidential candidates will not only face each other, but the elements next month when they head to Chicago Soldier Field August 7th for an Under the Stars AFL-CIO presidential forum. The nation's largest labor federation originally planned to hold the forum at McCormick Place, but more than 12,000 union members want to attend. An open field that was once the city of Champaign's landfill now presents an open opportunity for city and park district leaders. The city council and park district board meet tonight. They could decide to share the cost of a consultant who would help determine what to do with the former landfill site just west of Champaign on Bloomington Road. It's currently used as a police training ground and a place to fly radio-controlled airplanes. But City Planning Director Bruce Knight says leaders believe the land is underutilized and could be turned into a park facility. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is Drew Lerner. He's the Senior Agricultural Meteorologist at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Good afternoon to you, Drew.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about the Midwestern weather. What do we look like as we head through the end of the week?
Well, we're kind of stuck in a rut here. In this case, the rut isn't all that bad for this time of the year. To not have persistent hot, dry weather is a blessing, I think. Most of the Midwest has experienced some favorable rainfall in the past 8 to 10 days. Of course, there are still pockets of dryness out there, and I don't want to give the impression that everything's just wonderful out there, but the majority of the Midwest is doing pretty good. The rainfall potentials coming up here over the next 8 to 10 days are favorable as well. I don't think we're going to see a lot of precipitation that will be capable of countering evaporation, though, and that does mean that net drying will likely occur in many areas over the next 8 to 10 days. But, of course, that is normal for midsummer when our temperatures are getting in the 80s and lower 90s on a regular basis. It's really difficult to hold soil moisture at status quo, and in most cases it does dry out a little bit, and that's what's going to take place. A little drying right now from eastern Iowa into western parts of Indiana would certainly be welcome after all of last week's rain. The rest of the Midwest, though, probably doesn't want a lot of dryness. I think the northwestern Corn Belt continues to be suffering greatly from the lack of moisture. There's a cool front that is expected to move from northwest to southeast across the Midwest from Thursday into Saturday. It will set off showers and thunderstorms in about 65% of the western Corn Belt and maybe 75% of the eastern belt. We'll see rain amounts that will run up to about 65 hundredths of an inch in the west and then up to 3/4 inch in the east. There will be some locally strong thunderstorms capable of producing more than an inch of rain, but we're talking about counties and parts of states rather than generalized precipitation in that range. But all the precipitation will be welcome. It'll help to bring temperatures back down or keep those temperatures down, I guess, across a large part of the Midwest. The western areas will cool off the most significantly. And then a ridge of high pressure will develop very briefly during the weekend and the early to middle part of next week that will likely dry out the region again and let the temperatures heat up again. The temperatures are not expected to become excessively hot, not nearly as hot as they were in the western Corn Belt earlier this week, but we are expecting a little bit more warmer weather, and the warmth after the rain will help to stimulate crop development. Of course, we will continue to dry out some of those northwestern Corn Belt country areas, though.
As we close out July and look into August, any indication of what that month might be like?
August will likely start off very much like July. I think we'll see a good mix of rain and dry weather across the region. Our temperatures will probably continue to have a little bit of a cooler bias. In at least the eastern two-thirds of the region, the west will probably be a little bit warmer. In the second half of August and going into September, I think we'll probably see a warmer, drier bias starting to kick in. So some of this dryness in the western Corn Belt will likely expand a little bit. The eastern Corn Belt will likely dry down a bit as well. But at this point, I can't say we're going to have a persistent hot, dry pattern where we don't get any breaks. But I do think we'll see more heat than we've been seeing here this month, and we'll probably also see a little bit further decline in rainfall potential.
Drew, we appreciate you being with us.
Well, thank you, and have a good day.
You too. Drew Lerner is the senior agricultural meteorologist at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, and that is today's closing market report. Be sure to tune in tomorrow morning at 8:49 for our first look at the markets with Dave Dickey, your director of agricultural programming. I'm Todd Gleason.